Hi, I'm James Brooks, and welcome to From the Factory Floor, a conversational podcast about all things startup and tech, brought to you by the folks at thestartupfactory.tech.
So welcome to episode 18 of From the Factory Floor, slightly later than I think we anticipated, but after our previous episode, this week is all about legals, that lovely, lovely subject that founders tend to want to try and avoid or don't understand, or it's far too many documents. So as someone who's not as au fait with the legals as needed, I've got two experts with me. So obviously from TSF, Ian's making a welcome return. Hi, Ian.
Hi, I'd just like to qualify that straight away. I wouldn't profess to be an expert. I think an enthusiastic amateur with a lot of experience, medals and scars, both sides.
Yeah, you've paid a lot of fees, Ian. That's
I'm glad you recognise that you're the beneficiary of a real...
Got a new jumper here. No, anyway.
Yeah. And the other guest joining us today, obviously, as Ian's just mentioned, is John from Berman's. Welcome, John.
Hi, everyone. First time.
Do you want to just give us, John, a sort of a 2-minute intro to who you are, what you do, who you work for?
Hang on, lawyers don't do things in 2 minutes. You know that, don't you?
Yeah. I'll put the clock on now. No, my name's John Davidge. I'm head of corporate at a firm called Berman's, which is in Manchester and Liverpool. We specialise in corporate transactional work, but really focus on owner managers across the firm. So we do the whole discipline from intellectual property, commercial contracts. But myself, I concentrate on startups, seed investment, secondary investment, private equity, and then the full sale pre-listing. Yeah, we tend to, obviously, we work with the startup factory and those types of businesses. So we tend to obviously get to know the management team and mould the legals round the management team to suit their particular business. So it's really a holistic approach to technology businesses and a whole raft of different businesses throughout the business community.
I think the other thing that's worth just mentioning, James, before we get into kind of the subject matter, is one of the recurring themes we've spoken about on these podcasts is about relationships and people. And John, again, has always been there when we've needed him. You know, so he's both in the deal, outside of the deal. You've got to get on with people. And again, one of the things we've always spoken about at the startup is kind of having that team of people. John's been an integral member of the TSF team for a number of years.
It's a big thing, you know, particularly when you're going through any sort of corporate transaction, is that no matter when it is in the evening or the weekends, you have to counsel the individuals, both on the legals, but on the emotional side as well. And that's a big part of my job. It's dealing with the characters as well as the legals. Yeah.
There's certainly characters when it comes to founders and entrepreneurs, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think might as well start off at the most sensible place, which is the beginning. So I think when people first setting up a startup or thinking of doing it, almost what you do in terms of the legals is something that I can imagine, you know, people know about IP but don't particularly understand it. And I think that probably sums it up quite well, that a lot of people know of things but don't quite understand what it is they should do and what they need in place. And I don't know, John, if there's anything just from literally from the outset of someone setting up a startup.
Yeah, I mean, I think before you're sort of pre-revenue and you're setting up with founders that, you know, funnily enough, sometimes haven't met in person, you just need to obviously have that level of trust, obviously, before you start any business. And then you mould the legals around that. So, you know, the Companies Act in the UK doesn't give you any formal legal protection between shareholders and directors. It's there to allow commerce to thrive, and it isn't structured in a way to stop that. So that's when you bring the legals in. You've got your great idea, you know, you're pre-revenue, you think there's something in it, you're spending your own money on it, and in that time is when you should really look at getting the legals. And the simplest way to look at it is that you need an insurance contract between the shareholders, and that's what you call a shareholders agreement. And that basically means is that it's an insurance policy that is hopefully put in a drawer and is never used. But if the founders fall out or they want to move on, then it gives the abilities for the remaining founders to get those valuable shares back. And that's essential, because as the business grows, the last thing you want when you're going to raise finance or you're selling the business is one founder that's not involved in growing the business, adding value, still having shares. And that's the most important thing, is the shareholders agreement. The terms and conditions, the software agreements, that can all be tailored once you start trading. But really, the shareholders agreement, which brings in all the intellectual property back into the company, because that's the main asset, that is the founding cornerstone of any legal structure. And then you move on from there. So that's my best advice. Spend the money. You can do a deal with your lawyer. You don't have to have a load of fees up front. You know, if the lawyer trusts you, rates the management team, you can spread that cost over a number of months. But they're really worth the wait in gold, a good drafted shareholders agreement.
I'd agree with that. I think, like you said, James, we're all guilty of this. We kind of go on Google. I think it was a phrase that John said, Google law in the TSF book. I think getting a relationship, getting face-to-face with someone you can trust, who gets to know you as an individual, I think is really important. The fees are obviously always an issue because the cash is tight, but I think it's money well spent. At the outset, as John has just indicated, it's important you get the framework right, you get the relationship right, you get the foundations right. I mean, entrepreneurs kind of like to roll the dice. I'd say lawyers kind of know the rules of the game. I think the combination of the two, you know, would work. You know, works really well. And if you, as you know, we've had examples of people that have walked in to TSF. They've got a half-baked shareholders agreement which they've breached. They're not sure where their IP sits, and it's just a mess. And unpicking that is so difficult.
Yeah, it's far cheaper in the long run to do that at the start. So you've got good corporate governance from the get-go. And then adding to that, when the business grows and your intellectual property develops, is far easier than, as Ian says, unwinding it when something's happened. Or an investor has done due diligence and you've got no idea where your intellectual property is.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's almost that measure twice, cut once sort of aspect of doing it properly the first time rather than having to redo things.
Yeah, and it's an insurance policy. And you think any business that's got a valuable asset, you have to have insurance. Just think of that as your shareholders agreement and your legal documents. That's what they are. They're an insurance policy that if something goes wrong, they will save you money, i.e. you don't have to go to court because you can hopefully settle through the shareholders agreement.
Yeah, one of the things, John, maybe worth unpacking is just give us a couple of minutes on share structure. I mean, alphabet shares is a common thing these days. And again, just conscious that, you know, some startup founders will be reading stuff on the internet and trying to kind of get their head around the share structure. I think that's a really important first thing as well. How do you kind of broker that from a legal point of view?
Yeah, I mean, the founders, in my opinion, if they're on an equal footing, should definitely have just the same class of share. And you can call that an A share. So that means that they have exactly the same rights. This is before an investor comes in, which, you know, is a whole other subject in itself. But it means that if any dividends are declared, they get equal dividends, and there's no arguments about it. The different classes of shares that are then a B share can be then issued to employees who aren't on the board, who you want to tie in to go along that journey with you. So that's when the alphabet share structure comes in. And in the past, the alphabet structure is two things. It was to give flexibility on dividends. So the board can declare a dividend on the shares to itself rather than everyone. That's becoming less and less important because of the corporation tax changes in the most recent budget. They're no longer as tax efficient to pay dividends as salaries. So that's sort of gone away. So the main things, reason you have a different class of share is capital rights on an exit. So you may say the founders, if they set up, if you sell, they get the first £5 million. And then the people who came later in the journey, the B shareholders, get a share of the next £5 million. So that's really where, for me, the alphabet shares come into play. So you have to think very carefully about when you give these away and when you structure them. Because as you know, Ian, when you're bootstrapping a business, you give shares away rather than cash.
Yeah.
And you've just got to be careful that it's, you know, you're all mates at the beginning when the business may not be as valuable, but software businesses can rocket. And you've given 5, 10, 15% away, and you just need to be sure that, you know, that's fair at the time. So that's where founders can get really caught out with the alphabet arrangements.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about founders getting caught out. A couple of years ago, had a guy approach me and said, "Oh, I've got a team of five people," which I thought was a bit unwieldy. I kind of want to bring them all in, and, you know, I've talked to them about it. Can you help me set the company up and you know, give us a business plan? So I met these five other folk, and the fella had basically promised them 110% of the company. So he'd done himself out of anything, and everybody else on 110%. So
Yeah, that's like something off the Apprentice, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It was just comical. But that obviously caused a little bit of bad feeling very much at the outset because you know, I think the view is the legal framework's constraining us. But it's actually it's reverse. It's giving you that platform and getting all that back in place.
Yeah.
The other thing, John, which I think you've always been really helpful on, I think is helping people understand the importance of IP and where that sits and getting that right at the outset. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about the process and how you go about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, this is particularly in technology businesses because the intellectual property vests in the founders, and they may come from an academic institution such as a university or whatever, because basically under English law, when you write code, the copyright is just like a book. It's the same thing. If you write a book or you write a code, the copyright vests in the individual if they've not formed a company. So obviously, when you're forming that company, any valuable code needs to immediately be vested in that company by a deed. It's very easily to be done. And this can be all wrapped up in a shareholders agreement by a simple paragraph. So that is really important. And we've all been there that when you come to raise your seed round, the only real asset you've got pre-trading is your intellectual property. So that's the first thing the investor looks at. And if you've got a whole raft of consultants or developers that have worked on it, you just need to make sure that if you've paid them, that that's all vested in the company. So it's really, really important that the founders vest immediately into the company by a simple deed, by the shareholders agreement. And then along the journey, if you're using outsourced developers, any contract you have between them, any IP they work on vests in the company on payment of their invoices, because they won't do that unless you pay them, obviously. Anyone would do, but it's just a very, very simple process that the management team can just do. Each project you have, get your commercial contract that clearly states the IP created, the background or foreground IP on your platform, vests in the company on payment of the invoice. And if you start that right at the beginning, every project you do will be structured. And then hopefully it's easy to prove where the IP vests.
Yeah, really, really good advice. I think one of the challenges as well is kind of getting, someone like yourself a seat at the table early on because everyone's brainstorming ideas, they're firing stuff around, they're wanting partnerships, they're wanting to crack on. But this is kind of almost like pause. You put the foundations in place, isn't it? Because you will regret it if you don't get it right.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest partnership in the world is open source software, isn't it? Everyone shares that. But there is colorations of that with every tech business if you do software business. You see, so you've just got to be careful. A handshake's great, but if you've got a developer that's not an employee, that's not signed up, and they start to see that this value is going up, you need to put the conditions on whose IP that is and be very clear that what's being developed is your IP because you're paying for it. Which you guys do day in, day out with the startup factory, don't you? At the end of the day.
Yeah, and like I said, anyone listening to this that wants kind of just a coffee and a chat, we're more than happy to do that. We always start off, the nature of our sweat equity model is a shareholders agreement, is an IP agreement, and it's a software development agreement.
Exactly.
It's kind of a framework. So, yeah, anyone wants a chat, happy that we can do it. But then if you want some more structured advice, then obviously John is the person to talk to. So I think having kind of identified who you want to work with, got the relationship, got the trust, I think it's then important we kind of you're good to go now. What are the next stages, John, from a legal point of view in terms of employment, contracts, terms and conditions, those sort of things?
Yeah. So you sort of think of the company as an onion, I guess, and at the core you've got your Companies Act, then you peel off one core and you've got your shareholders agreement and your articles. Then you go to trading. Yeah, so you start thinking about your terms and conditions, which are really important. So that's where you basically commercialize your intellectual property, your terms and conditions of sale, which can be SaaS software licenses and agreements. So that will be bespoke, particularly with SaaS agreements. They're never really off the shelf. So for me, that's when you really need to get your accountant and your lawyer and people like the Startup Factory in a room or on a Zoom call to really, deconstruct the nuts and bolts of what you're trying to do, what you're trying to achieve, what that contract should say, so that when it goes to the customer, you're fully covered on your data protection, your GDPR, your escrow agreements. And an escrow agreement is if anything happens to you as a business, the software is protected. And all these things are never really thought about at the beginning. And they are sort of layers of legal protection. So that, for me, after your shareholders agreement, is absolutely the first port of call, your terms and conditions of customer engagement. And because, you know, you'll see throughout COVID, the online world has just expanded even further. Every business is an online business now. So all these contracts are, you know, from a legal perspective, this is a massive growth area for us, because the old traditional businesses are all going online. You know, even the manufacturing businesses need to do that. Yeah. So it's a massive world, and the legals are, you know, legals definitely catching up with technology as well. And I think it's there. And then what's the next layer of the onion? Well, who's going to discharge? Who's going to deal with your customers? Who's going to commercialize your business? The founders can't do everything. So then you're onto your management, your second tier management team, if you're big enough. So you have to get your director service agreements bolt on. And then your management, your sales contracts, which are just different, but they can be standard. But the key in any commercial business in there is your restrictive covenant. So what does that mean? It means that if they leave, they're not going to steal all your customers and all your intellectual property. So, you know, there could be 20 pages in an employment contract. Main area there is the restrictive covenant and your notice period and what that person's going to do to you. So if they don't discharge the duties, you can easily remove them, which sounds macabre, but you need to act quickly if someone isn't adding value. So, you know, that's sort of going down the waterfall. And, you know, then you've got your property leases if you have a premises. Big thing for you guys as tech developers is GDPR and data protection. And that fits into your employment contracts and your terms and conditions. And we, you know, we'd look at all of that. It's a mini ecosystem, how all the legals feed off each other.
I guess there's one document we didn't mention there, which I don't know where it quite falls within that waterfall onion, is where NDAs sit within that.
Yeah, your NDA will be in your software license, which is your terms and conditions. So there will be confidentiality provisions in there in your terms and conditions. If you're doing a joint venture, though, so it's not a customer, it's a joint venture, then before you start talking to the joint venture partner, that's when you sign your NDA. NDAs are fine, but I'll always say that they're notoriously hard to enforce. They are more of a warning shot than an absolute home run from a legal perspective. So for me, you've got to use your data rooms and your Dropboxes and all those things carefully. I do. Don't share the crown jewels with the potential partners before you trust them. Yeah, and Ian knows that, and you know we've seen that many, 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 many times. And you can have as many legal documents in the world, but you've got to make sure you trust your business partners as best you can. You know, not from the get go. The relationship develops, but that's my best advice.
Yeah, a number of things in there, John, that really resonate. I think, you know, virtually every project or investment we make in a startup has a data element these days.
Yeah.
The data protection is important, end user license agreements, you know, the software as a service model, that SaaS agreement is really important, defining the boundaries, ownership, as well as the commercial terms. So again, you can't wing it anymore.
No.
I think the kind of the nature of the commercial model and what you own and what you've got rights to and what are the assets of the business. I think the other thing we found difficult with founders is getting them to understand why they need those employment contracts. And I think, you know, right at the outset of this podcast, you use the word insurance. I think it's good. You have to plan for, you know, not good outcomes.
Yeah.
And I think everything we've talked about is an insurance policy around NDAs, T's and C's, and employment contracts. But then I think once they're all agreed, you know, you've got the good framework and you can press the button and go commercially.
Yeah. Corporate governance is set. It is set, and then you can build on that, and it also makes you more attractive to investors because they can see you've already got those building blocks in place which they will build on top of it, you know, hopefully when you raise further funds. And it just makes the entire business journey easier. And get those building blocks in place, and businesses become far more complicated as they grow, and the documents change. But at least then you understand the base, and all the weird and wonderful clauses that come in when private equity comes in won't be as much of a shock to you if you've gone through the process at seed stage.
Yeah, well, let's do another podcast about bringing investors in, because I think once you've got the framework and you've traded,
that's another step. Yes.
So that's another podcast on that. But I think my kind of advice as a takeaway to wrap this podcast up is don't be seduced by cheap online automated Google legal documentation systems. Get yourself a good person, a good lawyer who you can talk to, who you can pick the phone up and have a personal relationship. And the startup is based on having the right people around you. So while I know there's kind of a lot of systems where you can kind of apparently download these kind of ready-made documents, they're not. Every business is different. Find yourself a good lawyer. You know, make sure you can get on with them at a personal level as well.
I mean, I think mine would be, as a takeaway for this podcast, because I know we're sort of coming up to that time where we like to wrap these things up, is it's something that I think we've said, whether it was the accounting when we spoke to Elliot and any element of business, is having that team around you that you trust. Really making sure, because like John said at the outset, it's not just necessarily the legal aspect of it, but it's the personal and actually just helping people through something where, you know, they're not known. There's very emotive times for people.
You've given some great commercial advice based on your experience, you know, the legal framework you've given us, but you've actually given some real solid commercial insight which have helped grow and take some of the businesses forward. So, you know, like you say, the legal profession, the accounting profession has evolved to giving business advice as well as that specific domain advice. So, yeah, I'd highly recommend John. Go on, John, give us your contact details so people can get hold of you for a chat.
My email address is john.davage, that's john.davage, D-A-V-A-G-E, at Bermans, that's bermans.co.uk. Their mobile number is 07842 425 414. And always happy to have a, you know, Zoom chat, no strings attached, to just give you my thoughts on any stage of your business, from startup all the way through seed to investment, sale, and all the rest in between.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, John. So we'll look forward to catching everyone on the next one.
I think that just about wraps things up here. If you have any thoughts or questions on anything we said today, get in touch, whether that be through our Twitter at RealTSF or email at hello@startupfactory.tech, or feel free to drop in for a coffee and a chat. As ever, thanks for listening.